This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This week, the National Book Critics Circle Award for Best Biography of the Year went to Edmund White for his biography of Jean Genet. Until now, White had been best known for his autobiographical novels, A Boy's Own Story and The Beautiful Room Is Empty, chronicling the adolescence and coming of age of a gay man. White's writing has been very influenced by Genet, who is considered one of France's most original writers of the 20th century. Through Genet's books, he constructed a legend of himself as a thief, vagabond, and sexual outlaw. In the biography, Ed White tries to find the story of the real man. Genet lived from 1910 to 1986. He wrote 5 novels, including Our Lady of the Flowers, a volume of memoirs called Prisoner of Love, and several plays, including The Maids and The Balcony. I spoke with Ed White last November when his biography of Genet was just published. White never met Genet, but White's life was changed by Genet's writing.
First of all, it seemed to me swooningly beautiful. I mean, I think that he was somebody, for instance, I mean, I was a nice little middle-class boy, and I think had I not read Genet, I would have been alarmed by drag queens, sneered at them the way most middle-class gay guys did in those days. But because of Genet, I found something heartbreakingly beautiful and romantic about this whole sort of gay underworld, the world of hustlers, of drag queens, of petty thieves, and so on. So when I arrived in New York in 1962, I used to love to walk up and down Greenwich Avenue and see the people that middle-class gays dismissed as riffraff.
Did you seek out some of the squalor that Genet wrote about?
Well, yeah. I mean, I even tried to be in male pornography for a while. I mean, it was all ridiculously misfired. And I have a book of essays coming out next year. And one of the essays is one that I wrote at the time, which was never published in the 60s, called On Becoming a Model for Male I'm Becoming a Model for Male Smut, or something like that. And none of it worked. All of my attempts join the underworld were horribly misfired. But anyway, I did find something very romantic and beautiful about it.
You know, I think one explanation about why your attempts to join the underworld misfired, I mean, if you look at two of your major literary influences, you have Genet influencing on you on one hand and Nabokov on the other.
That's true, right. But, I mean, what they have in common is they're both dandies. I mean, they're both people who don't think of human society in collective terms, who see themselves as isolated individuals living outside the herd. And that very much rang a bell for me in those days, in the 60s, when my own sensibility was being formed. I think now, I mean, I have a much more of a collective sense of being a gay man amongst other gay people. But in those days, I felt very isolated, and I liked that aspect of their work.
Your biography of Genet opens in the outhouse, and I'd like you to read the beginning of chapter one.
Thank you. Somebody said the other day in Vogue magazine that this must be the strangest beginning of any big book. As a child in the village of Aligny-en-Morvan, southwest of Dijon, Genet liked to spend hours in the outhouse. There were 2 outhouses, one close to the big stone house with the slate roof, the other 20 paces across the vegetable garden and next to the school wall. It was in this less convenient, more remote cell that he passed hours daydreaming and reading. And this is a quote from one of his books. The memory with the quickest sting is of the toilet outside the house with the slate floor. It was my refuge. Life, which I perceived as distant and blurred through its shadow and smell, a softening smell in which the odor of elder trees and the rich earth predominated, since the outhouse was all the way at the end of the garden near the hedge, life reached me as singularly sweet, tender, light, or rather lightened, stripped of its heaviness. I speak of this life which consisted of the things outside the toilet, the remainder of the world, everything that wasn't my little hideout of boards riddled by insects. Life seemed to me to float a bit like a painted dream, while I, in my hole, like a larva, took up a peaceful, nocturnal existence. And sometimes I had the feeling I was slowly sinking deeper, as in a sleep, or a lake, or a maternal bosom, or even, an act of incest toward the spiritual center of the world.
Why did you begin there, in the outhouse?
Because I feel that Janet was somebody who was essentially and deeply solitary. Solitary to the point that he was always surrounded by a kind of invisible shell that protected him from contact with other people. And I wanted to show that there was this theme in his life that when he was a boy, he was in the outhouse listening to the world, observing it, but not seeing it, but hearing it, imagining it, thinking of it. But in this totally solitary space of his own. Later, he was in prison and again tried to imagine the life and loves of purely fictive characters that he invented. And he wrote his first two novels in prison and the other three in the shadow of prison, in the sense that he was always afraid of being arrested again and given life imprisonment.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Edmund White, and he's written a new biography of Jean Genet. Genet never knew his father. His mother abandoned him when he was a child, so he became a ward of the state in France. He went to reform school and then later to prison. What were the crimes he was charged with committing, and what were his sentences?
Genet liked to darkly hint that he was a real big-time criminal, and he even said to an interviewer who interviewed him late in life, you can ask me anything you want, but don't ask me if I ever murdered someone. But in fact, when we plumbed into the realities of Genet's criminal record, we found he'd stolen four bottles of aperitif, he'd stolen a fabric sample, he'd stolen a luxury edition of Verlaine's poems, Fête Galante, he'd stolen the autographs of two French kings, he had stolen another book, he had doctored his train ticket, and he'd stolen fabric samples twice. I have just listed his entire crimes.
Right, so he's not among the world's most hardened criminals.
Cocteau, who discovered Genet and first got him published in the 1940s, said, "Look, you're a very great writer and a terrible thief. Please, please stop stealing."
His writing about prison has a certain erotic power. I mean, in his fiction, he found an erotic power in prison. What about his real-life experience of prison?
I think his real-life experience of prison was pretty miserable, but I think that the secret about Genet is that the one emotion he never wanted to solicit from the reader was pity. I think he was terrified of appearing pitiful in anyone's eyes. He was very proud, and I start my book actually with a quotation from Kierkegaard, in which he says that there's this kind of person who's passed so far away from God into sin that even if God were to now appear before him and forgive him for all his sins, he wouldn't want to be forgiven. He wants to rage against the whole world, because only by doing so can he prove to himself that he's in the right. And I think that's really crucial to Genet. So Genet pictures, I mean, if you look at, for instance, there's a whole tradition of prison poetry in France, but the other prison poets are all people who are saying, "Oh, I am sad, you are happy because you're outside the prison. I didn't really commit the crime. Please release me. I want to join you. I see a little dog walking by on the street outside the prison bars. Why can't I be?" Genet is entirely the opposite of this. He says, "Look, you're a jerk, you reader, and you're leading this boring middle-class life, and we guys in prison are all having fabulous sex and this very rich, hierarchical, marvelous existence that is like something out of the Middle Ages."
How interested were you in finding out about Genet's real sex life and how that compared to the sexuality of his fictional characters?
Well, I was interested in every way trying to figure out what was the difference between Genet's legend as he presented it and what was the truth. And that was certainly one aspect of it, because I was able to interview for hours and hours and hours, days and days, one of his lovers named Java, who appears as a character in Thief's Journal, and who is a very frank and open guy, and who told me that most of Genet's sexuality was in his head, that he didn't like really having sex very often. He loved to write about it. Once in a while, he would go out when they were living in a little hotel room together in Montmartre and hire a hustler, but it was all sort of quickly done. He didn't really like sex that much, but he loved to talk about it.
How did Genet get interested in literature? Because the life that you're describing is so much the life of somebody who you'd think would be cut off from the world of literature.
Well, I think that when he was a boy, he was the number one student in the village. He was the person that was the leading student in the whole county, and was considered very brilliant, was constantly reading, and who was the priest's favorite choir boy because he spoke Latin with the best accent and memorized the verses best. So he's not at all the sort of tough little criminal child that he liked to picture later. He was, in fact, a sissy. And like a classic gay boy sissy, he was somebody who didn't want to work, didn't like to play with boys, but rather he liked to play with dolls, with girls, and who liked to dress up, was interested in the mass, in ceremonies in general, and was a tremendous daydreamer who didn't have very many friends, and who liked to go off into the fields with the cow, and while the cow grazed, he sat and read books. Later, when he was sent to reform school, he wasn't allowed to study because Maitre had a very sinister injunction against teaching the boys anything that might give them ideas above their station. But somehow or other, Genet got his hands on the poems by the Renaissance French poet Ronsard and memorized them, as he would later do in prison with the plays of Racine. So that Genet was somebody who very freely in conversation could introduce whole stanzas of poetry from the great classics. Then he was 6 years in the army, and that's a period in his life that he always concealed because he didn't like to admit that he'd done something so normal as be a soldier. But while he was in the army, he was stationed in a very boring French town called Toul, and there he read all of Dostoevsky and a lot of contemporary fiction, and even began a literary correspondence with other writers.
You write how in the later part of Genet's life he took up the cause of the Black Panthers in the United States, of the PLO, but gay rights was never high on his list of causes. Do you know why not?
Well, I think that he didn't rank it as being so important. I mean, I think, in other words, he... first of all, I think he's somebody who, when he was queried by the gay German writer Hubert Fichte in the 1970s, Fichte said, "Do you mean to say when you were a young guy, you were a hustler and you used to beat up other gay people? Didn't you have any feeling of solidarity toward other gays?" And Genet said, "Not at all." And he says, "And you're being absurd if you expect me, as a peasant boy in the 1930s in France, if you expect me then to have had the kind of sophisticated political consciousness that you have now in the 1970s in Germany." So I think he's quite right. I mean, he is showing us that before gay liberation, people didn't have much of a feeling of solidarity with other gays. And Genet never experienced his sexuality as a collective thing, as I mentioned earlier. He always felt that it was something unique and personal and solitary.
My guest is Edmund White, author of a biography of Jean Genet. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Ed White is my guest. In a New York Times Magazine article that you wrote a few years ago on gay fiction, you said perhaps no other body of literature is as subject to political pressure from within the community as gay fiction is. Does that relate to Genet at all? Has he been seen as not being good for for gay writers, or as very important, as a very important part of gay fiction? Yeah, in other words, have there been kind of political reasons to like or not like Genet?
I don't think he's had much of an influence on American gay theorists. I think that most of the important gay theorists have taken a longer look at Proust, let's say, than at Genet. But maybe, I like to think, my book might get people talking about it and thinking about it. I think Genet has a lot to teach people about sexuality.
Getting back to your comment about pressure from within the gay community on people who write gay fiction, did you feel subjected to any of that pressure, either in deciding to write a biography on Genet or in your interpretation of him?
Well, it's interesting. While I was working on it, Larry Kramer gave an interview to The Advocate in which he said that the only acceptable thing for any gay writer in the world to be doing now was to write about AIDS. And he said, "Edmund White, of all things, is writing about Genet." But the other day I talked to Larry and he said, "Oh, well, now I've read your book and I think it was worth your while. I'm glad you did it." So I thought that was very nice of him. I wasn't disturbed that he said it anyway. I mean, it just seemed to me that we can't all do the same thing, and there are AIDS activists and who are writing about that. I wanted to write about Janae because as somebody who's HIV positive himself, I like to be reminded that there are other aspects of gay culture that have nothing to do with illness. It seems to me that before 1969, homosexuality was pretty much treated as a medical problem. And one of the great triumphs of gay liberation was to demedicalize it. And now, because of AIDS, once again, every time the public thinks about gays, they think about AIDS, that is a medical problem. So, for instance, in the midst of all of the sadness of losing friends and lovers, I found reading Richard Ellman's biography of Oscar Wilde a wonderful inspiration, because here was a reminder of this towering figure who was this great cultural figure who was martyred, but for other political reasons, not for medical reasons. And I think that Janae is a similar figure. And I think that it's interesting to have these sort of beacons shining through what is a darker and darker night.
Well, you mentioned the dark night. That reminds me that your editor who asked you to write this biography, Bill Whitehead, died after you agreed to write the book. Your mother died while you wrote the book. Was it hard to write the book with that happening around you?
The book is dedicated to Hubert Sorin, who's my French lover who has AIDS and who's in a bad way, and to Bill Whitehead, who, after he commissioned it, did die. And, I think that I part of my feeling was, well, why am I spending so much time on a biography that, after all, could be written by somebody else, whereas only I can write my fiction, whether it's good or bad. But on the other hand, I thought, I don't know, this is an interesting piece of work. I think I'm the right person to do it. I think it should be done now, because most of the people who knew Janae, especially those who knew him when he was young, are dying, and have many of them since died after I interviewed them. So it seemed to me very important to get all this down before it vanished.
Was it good for you to write something that wasn't coming just solely from within, you know?
Yeah, I found it an enormous relief, frankly, to not think about myself for a while.
Uh-huh.
I found it, and it's interesting, like, I'm not all that well known as a novelist in France, and so people just would leave me alone and let me do my work. But every once in a while I would go to England to give a reading and to talk about Janae, and people would suddenly say, but what about your own fiction? It would startle me, because I sort of forgotten about my own fiction. I was so absorbed in this project while working on it, so afraid I wouldn't finish it, so afraid, I mean, that I would get AIDS dementia and lose my memory, which, of course, is a nightmare for anybody, but especially for a biographer. I mean, I had so much information in my head, and I kept thinking, am I going to get it all down before I enter into some sort of mental decline? Anyway, it all got done, and I'm still in perfectly good health, even after 10 years of being positive.
That's really good to hear. That's very good to hear.
Thanks.
I want to get back to the process of writing the biography of Janae. One thing that you said someplace that really interested me is that it was much more difficult to interview people in France than it is to interview people in the United States. That you couldn't just pick up the phone and casually ask people intimate questions like you actually can do in the United States.
Absolutely. There's an entirely different attitude toward information, toward meeting people, and so on. In France, it's sort of like Japan. You have to always have an intermediary call for you and prepare the groundwork for you. And then later you call that person. And you have to sort of lay siege to somebody. The most extreme case of that was I wanted to interview a woman called Paul Thévenin. She was a good friend of Janae's during the 60s and helped him prepare the final script of the screens and was a very important witness for me. But she refused point blank to see me. So in my totally Machiavellian and creepy way, I hired an American girl for a year to pretend to take French lessons from this woman so that she could become friendly enough that she could then later introduce me to Paul. And then Paul and I became great friends, and I think she finally developed a lot of confidence in me and knew I was going to do a serious book, and she lived long enough to read it and to like it. But it's very, very hard to get French people to open up. And also with a subject like Janae, I mean, if you think of the usual literary biographer, biography is about a writer who was middle class, who grew up much photographed by his parents. Every little theme paper that he did in school was saved by his mother. All of his friends later turned out to be lawyers and doctors and have abundant memories of him and long lives in which to bear witness. Whereas Genet is not at all that kind of life, because the first half of his life is passed amongst the kind of people who are very hard to find. I mean, in other words, vagabonds, jailbirds, male prostitutes. I mean, this is a group of people who, alas, oftentimes die young or are hard to find mm-hmm. or melt away. If you do find them, they don't want to tell you anything. If they do tell you something, you're not sure you can believe it. I mean, it was very, very difficult to track all this stuff down.
You've written a series of two autobiographical novels, and they take you up to the period where you're a young man. Are you continuing this series? And if so, where are you in it?
Right. I wrote first A Boy's Own Story, which was about my adolescence, then The Beautiful Room Is Empty, which was about my 20s, and that ended with the Stonewall Uprising in 1969, the beginning of gay liberation. Now I'm continuing it with a book called The Farewell Symphony, which is about the 70s and the 80s, that is, the decade before and the decade after AIDS. And the title comes from the name of a Haydn symphony in which all the instrumentalists get up and leave the stage one after another, and there's only one violin left playing at the end, which is very much the feeling I have, having lost 50 or 60 of my closest friends, that is my whole generation in New York. For instance, I used to belong to a writer's club called the Violet Quill, and of the 8 original members, there are only 3 of us still living.
So does that mean you feel a certain responsibility to tell a story?
Yes, and a peculiar freedom. It's like nobody can contradict me because nobody's left alive. Yes, it is. I do feel a responsibility to talk. I mean, it's funny because now at age 53, I feel almost archaeological sometimes in my memories, because if I'll talk about the kind of wild times of the 70s, it seems very puzzling to young people today, who just feel it's almost mythical.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Edmund White is the author of Jean Genet, a biography. This week, it won the National Book Critics Circle Award for Best Biography of the Year. Our interview was recorded last November when the book was published. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.